The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will please come to order. Time 7:35. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on April 15th, 2014. Faxed into three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Hunterdon Review, and the Express Times. Also posting on the district website, the main bulletin board, the administrative office, and in each Clinton Township school. And lastly, faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mrs. Spitzer, may we please have a roll call?
Ms. Grant?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. Creda?
Present.
Mrs. Hand?
Here.
Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mr. Patuto?
Here.
Mr. Sturgis?
Here.
And Mrs. Verderama?
Here.
Mr. Malloy, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Certainly. And we'll sing "Take Me Out to the Ballgame." I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. McTiernan, would you serve as the process guardian for this evening?
Certainly.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Clinton Township Board of Education meeting. Today is Monday, May 5th, 2014, and this is a special meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. The purpose of this meeting tonight is to vote on the renewals for members of the Clinton Township staff, vote on rehiring and hiring of district professionals, and discuss and vote on our first reading for our district transportation policy. There are two items of significance that I would like to ask Dr. Clark to quickly review with the board. And the first is the rehiring of our district aides. And second, to please review the district action plan, why we have one, and how it's structured to fulfill board goals, please. Dr. Clark?
Okay. Let me first speak to special education staffing. We are seeing a reduction in some staffing in the district due to enrollment. In fact, we talked about this during the budget. If you remember, there was a page on the budget, all the budget presentations, that talked about enrollment impact. We really want to continue to support our students. But I also need to be sure that we have to deal with some current facts going on in the program. Right now, and there could be more, but right now, I have 52 classified students that are graduating eighth grade this year. And we are not seeing the same incoming demand. Five of those graduating students have personal aides. We don't have that same issue coming up in our preschool numbers. So I know that this is one of the bubble years that we have. We have a big class that's graduating with a number of students who you can see. We had a number of classified students and personal aides. And so those, we're losing those. When you see that loss, it automatically tells you that there will have to be some reductions in staffing. So I also want to share that in our autism classes, we are using a one-to-one ratio, all right, in the coming year. And that's inclusive of the teacher, all right? The code requires a three-to-one ratio. But this is Clinton Township, and we have a reputation for very strong programming for our students. We are going to keep our program strong. We are using a one-to-one ratio inclusive of the teacher. It is not due to budget cuts, all right, that any of these things are happening. This has to do with enrollment, and this has to do with programming for our students. If there are IEP requirements, as children get older, and they Hopefully, our programs are successful and their needs are met in different ways. We change programs. And right now, we have some really good programming issues that we're dealing with. We base it on current research, the one-to-one ratio, inclusive of the teacher, gives the students the appropriate support in the classroom, gives them additional support than code requires, and it also gives them the opportunity to have the teacher work with them more. And as much as we love, and I say love, our teaching assistants, we know that the teacher has particular training that is important to benefit our students, and we want the teacher to be spending time with the students as well. So it gives us options, all right? It also means that you will see more changing assignments this year. It may mean that an aide who has been here a long time at the middle school could move to Round Valley, or someone who's been at Spruce Run for a long time could move to PMG. You'll see some movement, all right? And I do want you to be aware of that, but we're changing assignments to best meet the needs of our students throughout the district. So I hope that answers your questions about special education staffing. I also want to share the action plan review. It is a little bit of an odd time to talk about action plans, but we had a little delay in the changing of the way boards reorganized this year and kind of a different setup. So we did our district goals a little later this year. And so in the goals, I sent out as part of the board packet an action plan that looks something like this that you should all have an opportunity to look at. And what I did is with each goal, I put some major activities that are included, some resources we need, timelines, and indicators of success. The important thing to look at here is that although it is May and we're doing an action plan, we've been working on many of these goals because what we did was we formalized them. We had been talking about them as a board for a while, and so I started moving on them and was able to put a lot of these things in place. So we've been doing a lot that match the goals and objectives already, and we've actually met a number of them. All right, we have some things that I will say to you when I look at the curriculum, the student achievement, where all students will show measurable progress in all areas of the New Jersey Common Core content standards. We're focusing on math and language arts, but we're not, because we meet some of these, doesn't mean that we're stopping the focus in because we reach June. It just means that in June, we start looking at what we achieved and what we didn't achieve and where else we want to go with this. The same holds true for an area in goal 3, which is predominantly to do with finance, all right? It's designing and promoting a fiscally responsible budget plan that supports quality education. We have a number of major activities in that goal, but because we meet those goals in trying to bring more people to our meetings, which doesn't look very successful tonight, it doesn't mean that you stop doing that because we've reached the end of the time span. A lot of these things continue and we just expand them. One of the things that I would like to share with you is we looked specifically at an area in goal 2, the supportive educational environment and developing an environment that enhances education for all students and enables all children to become productive citizens. and enhancing community relations through improved communication. You know, one of the things we talked about was student programs for community outreach. And we've done a number of those this year, but there are some exciting things that we've talked about that we could expand upon for next year. And I say these things to you because I don't want you to feel that in June this stops, that we should be thinking about this for next year, looking at these goals that we set carefully, and how can we expand on them for next year? So when we talk about the peer mentoring programs for students, there are some great things that our kids have been doing. I've got some favorites I love at Patrick McGarren, the Friendship Bench, where there's a bench there, and kids who feel like they don't have a friend to play with that day go and sit on the Friendship Bench, and other children come see them sitting there and come over and ask them to play. And it's part of the training. I thought that was just a wonderful outreach from peer to peer. However, there's even more things that we can do for the future. So I've already been thinking about how we can expand on some of these goals. So I'm not ready to let them go. But we have met a number of these items, particularly when we talk about the budget and all the budget presentations we've done, communicating about it, the Clinton Township newsletter, how we talked about there when I was filling in how many things we did to communicate about the Common Core and about PARC and about the teacher and principal evaluation system. All of those things, on every month I'm writing about those, communicating. So it's not going to stop, because remember last year one of our big goals was about enhancing communication in those newsletters. Just because the goal ends doesn't mean we stop doing those things. So I handed this out as the action plan to be formally approved tonight, but we've already been working, all the administrators have been working on it for months.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Clark relative to the action plan? Okay, great. I'd like to ask each member of the board to pay close attention to your board email over the next few weeks. We have some very tight deadlines of some projects. We have to do the superintendent's evaluation. We have to complete our board self-evaluation, and then we have to go through the process of evaluating the performance of superintendent to merit goals. And all of that is on a very strict timeline. They're associated with CUSAC points, et cetera. So please be very diligent the next few weeks. We'll be sending out instructions. And if you have any trouble being able to finish some things within the time frame, please let me know, and we'll try to work through that.
Did I read it wrong, or did they extend some of the deadlines for the superintendents?
Yeah, they did extend. It used to be April 1st, you had to have it done by. Now it's June 30th. So yes, you're correct.
Right, we have.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you.
Tonight we don't have a report of the superintendent or business administrator, so we're going to move along to our first public comment section on agenda items only. I would like to open the floor to our first public comment section on agenda items only. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw 167 limits comments to 3 minutes. We'll adhere to this bylaw to allow for everyone to be heard in a fair and consistent and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is only for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This too is defined by our bylaw. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you would like to address the board on a topic that is on the agenda, please step up to the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 20 minutes.
Mark McManus, 1620 Twin Oaks Lane and New Jersey. In the regulations that are going forward with the first reading on the transportation, was there a list of cul-de-sacs that were being considered or not considered? Or it said on there, no cul-de-sacs, but I was just trying to, you know, if there was information as to, you know, lists of ones that were possibly being considered because of inherent dangers.
No. Anyone else like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, I would like to open the floor for the first recognition of the public. I would like to open the floor to our first recognition of the public. This section is for members of the public to express themselves on school matters of community interest. We will follow the same outline for the first public comment on agenda items only. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section on, to 15 minutes.
My comment is actually concerning what Dr. Clark mentioned earlier about the action plan with the one-on-one levels with the special education side of things. I can understand with certain children where they don't require an aid all the time, but I know I'm going to be going into a specific instance where there's two children in a classroom, and if there's one teacher and one aide, and that teacher has got IEP meetings, has got all the training that's mandated by the state, there's going to be a child who hasn't got a person with them educating them, and I have concern about that.
I can't speak about individual children. However, I am aware of the class that you are referring to, and those parents have been in part of this conversation, and as far as I know, comfortable right now. Because this is not to do with budgeting, this has to do with programming, the best programming for kids. We are not in a position where, I'm just gonna say to you, let's suppose that the IEP plan that we currently have in place doesn't work. It's like any other IEP plan. You come back to the table, you have another conversation, and you say, okay, this is not working for this child. We have to do something else, all right? It's about the right program for that child at that time. If it doesn't work, we do whatever, you know, we do to make it work for the kids, because there's a very detailed plan.
Anyone else like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to move on to our committee reports this evening. Our Facilities and Finance Committee chairperson is Mr. Malloy. Mr. Malloy, would you give your report, please?
Certainly, thank you. 14 items tonight for the Finance and Facilities Committee. The first item you'll note, item 179, relates to specific student services for a child with an IEP. The remaining, 13 items are essentially contract renewals. They include contract renewals for our occupational physical therapy provider, for our photography, for our school physician, for the reappointment of our legal services provided by Porzio Bromberg Newman. The reappointment of our auditor, William Colantano, CPA, reappointment of our architect of record, Brett Somjan, participation in Hunterdon County Educational Services and Middlesex ESC cooperative pricing models, Hunterdon County ESC transportation, the appointment of Source for Teachers. Source for Teachers is something that we've talked about at great length at prior meetings. It's a service that we believe will actually provide a valuable service to the district in terms of available substitutes with, let's just say, none of the potential financial slash legal pitfalls that come with being the statutory and regulatory employer under the Affordable Care Act. So that's pretty much it. So, I mean, one item and then 13 contract renewals. So I seek a motion on items FF179 through FF192.
So moved.
Rachel.
Second?
Second.
Any questions or discussion for Mr. Malloy?
Yes. On 179, $67,500. Has that been budgeted for? I trust it has been.
This is a student that we receive in our district. We are billing for the student.
Oh, we are billing.
This is not us paying. That is correct. This is a student that is received by our district.
Okay, so they're coming. Okay, because I wasn't sure. The language doesn't show. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up on that question. Are you still on this question? Or are you moving on?
I have. You want to?
Can we just stick on this one?
Sure, absolutely sure.
I just wanted to know if you could just elaborate what goes into that cost.
Sure.
More specifically.
The cost of employing an aide in the district includes health benefits, pension contribution that the board is responsible for. Because they're a non-certificated staff member, we do pay our share of the FICA, whereas that's reimbursed. I'm sorry, FICA is Social Security and Medicare tax. On certificated staff members, the state of New Jersey reimburses the district for the employer contribution. For employees that are non-certificated, they do not. So those are the things, medical, dental, vision, things that we are contractually obligated. So that's what goes into that calculation, obviously along with salary.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And on 190 and 191, are those fees, have they changed? Are they the status quo? Have they gone up? Have they gone down? On 190, 191, the 5.5 administrator fee and the 4% administrator fee, are they?
They have not changed.
That's same.
That
okay.
is correct.
All right.
Any other questions for facilities and finance?
One quick thing I neglected to mention. Among service renewals, that includes our health insurance consultant, Brown & Brown. They are also, their term is up, and we are voting tonight on another, I believe it's, Mrs. Spitzer, a 12-month period?
That is correct. It's,
so
it's a school year.
Another 12-month period for them as well.
Any more comments, questions? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
I need to abstain on action item 188 and 190, and yes to all the rest.
Mr. Malloy?
Abstain on 187, yes to the others.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Moving on to the report of our Personnel Negotiations Committee, Mr. McTiernan is our chair. Mr. McTiernan, can you please give your committee's report?
Sir, we're submitting action items 14PN-201 through 14PN-215, with one exception in here, which is a resignation of a lunch aide. This really is the staff approval for continued employment of the district staff as required by law. We're to publicize this and approve that for all of the individuals. So we have some substitute rates that are in here also. We have the mail couriers that are there, basically the salaries for all of our staff members and also our VA. So I submit these 15 items for approval.
So we're looking for a motion for 14PN-201 through 14PN-215, please.
Motion.
Second, please.
Megan.
Discussion, questions?
You have a name change?
I know.
Now that we've put this motion up, we have one change to make in here, one correction, which would be on action item 14PN-205, last name non-tenured under Kimberly Braun. The degree step would be changed from BA plus 30 slash MA, comma, step ABC to degree step BA plus 30 step A, B, C. Salary would be changed from $51,642 to $49,142. That was a clerical error.
Okay. Looking for a friendly amendment from Mr. Malloy and Bertarama, please.
Oh, yes.
Accept.
Any other questions?
Can we make a comment?
Sure.
I just want to publicly make a comment with regards to Tim Jock that I've heard some really...
No.
All right, never mind. Take it back. Sorry.
No.
Okay, never mind.
Thank you.
Did you pay her? I was going to say something nice. I take it back. All right.
Any other discussion?
Yes. 215, do you need any discussion on that, or just it's the Dan, 215, any discussion on that, or is it just... Actually, on 215, do we need any
talk on that? I was discussing the executive session last week.
Yeah, no, I just thought maybe that's fine. No. I just didn't know if we needed to.
It's the same.
Okay. All right.
Anything else? Can you have a roll call vote, please, Mrs. Spitzer?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Ms. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Moving on to committee report from our policy and curriculum. Mrs. McLaughlin is the chair. Mrs. McLaughlin, would you please share your committee's report this evening?
Sure. We have several action items tonight. The policy and curriculum committee met on April 8th. The first action item involves approving existing curriculum developed in line with the Common Core standards. So there's no changes. We're just moving the curriculum forward. I'm going to skip the policy and regulation for a minute. I'm going to move on to action item 14 PC 033 through 036, actually through 035. You will see that there are a number of action items having to do with the establishment of programming or the elimination of programming, and these are all programs that have been established or eliminated. This is a compliance issue. We are just updating some of our language in our policies. Action item 14, PC 036. You heard Dr. Clark earlier expand on the action plan for the superintendent goals for this school year. And I'm going to go back to 032. The Policy and Curriculum Committee met and we reviewed the transportation policy as well as the regulation for the district. Earlier in the year, we had some transportation issues with efficiency of bus routes and the economy of operations. So we have some regulation changes that the committee discussed and they're recommending in our first reading. I'm going to remind you that this is a first reading, so we can have a discussion about the policy and if there are any changes. We can make them between the first reading and the second reading. The Policy and Curriculum Committee will actually be meeting tomorrow night, two nights in a row, to discuss anything that the board suggests tonight. And then we will have our second reading of this policy on our next regularly scheduled meeting, which is on May 19th. Changes to the policy are just under letter E, adding the economy of operations under the policy. And one suggestion that is not on your policy in front of you, but has been made to me, is on the first section down under the letter E. It originally said the criteria to be used, and we are suggesting changing that to factors to be considered. So it's just a language change. And then I don't have the regulation. Let me just get to that one.
Do you need it?
I don't have it in front of me. Do you have it handy? Under letter B, We're suggesting transportation routes shall be planned for maximum economy consistent with safe, efficient public transportation. Routes should be planned to load and unload pupils on the side of the road in which they reside. And then the next bullet down, letter C, buses will not travel down cul-de-sacs. Cul-de-sacs longer than 5/10 of a mile shall be considered based on their length. So those are the changes to the policy and regulation that we're making. With that being said, I'd like to move action items 14PC031 through 14PC036.
Looking for a motion, please?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Jean? Any discussion, questions for Mrs. McLaughlin?
I have a couple of questions. First question regarding policy guide. As I read, and I don't know if this is appropriate because this is already sort of different, but above economy or E, when we're talking about factors to be considered in designing routes and assigning people to them shall include D, the hazards involved on the route to be traveled. Would we be fair in saying that the hazards involved on the route to be traveled would actually include the stop it would make on that route, as opposed to necessarily the route to and from point A to point B? Are we talking about buses in transit or buses at stops? Are buses at stops included on the route? Put more simply, the route defines the entire trip from the depot to the school.
I'm going to defer to you on that. I would assume so.
I think so. I think that would be encompassed.
Okay, just checking. And then yep. As I look at regulation, C, buses will not travel down cul-de-sacs longer than 0.5 miles to be considered. This would exclude preschool, correct?
Yes.
And what about kindergarten?
Second.
This would exclude the proposed reading of regulation on cul-de-sacs would exclude preschool, of course, right?
I think they have the smaller bus.
Well, no, I think it's for the, unless they're, you know, they have an IEP for the preschool, right?
Okay.
They have preschool, they would have
and
an IEP.
So
they
then,
would be able
so then
to
this would factor in preschool and kindergarten children walking to the end of a street that might be up to a half mile long.
A half hour walk?
Half mile.
Oh, a half mile.
Point, yeah. So we,
well,
this proposed.
If it's above a half mile, we're saying in the regulation.
I understand
it
that.
May
but
be considered as.
But let's say it's 0.49. We now, this policy would have preschool and kindergarten children going to a bus stop 0.49 miles away. Is that correct?
So
I'm not sure about it impacting preschool.
Preschool,
they'd have IEPs.
So I don't think it involves preschool.
So then kindergarten students, however, we're telling kindergarten students then under this reading, if this is adopted, kindergarten students may be required to walk up to 4.49 miles to their bus stop. Okay.
Yes.
That's something with which
yes.
I have a great deal of
it
discomfort.
It would not impact preschool. It would impact kindergarten.
I'd have to believe the parents would accompany the child. I find it hard to believe the child would be left to walk alone.
Kindergarten, you can't get off the bus without
an
adult.
That's fine. And we live in a spread. Look, I appreciate other points of view. I'm simply giving mine. I don't have a great deal of comfort with, especially if you've got two working parents, things like that. You know, I can see walking a little ways, but when, you know, I've got a kindergarten or I've had kindergarten, it takes time to take a kindergarten kid or even a first grader and walk them 5/10 of a mile.
But if you drive around our community during a bus pickup or drop off, mm-hmm. very rare people walk. It's all parents driving to the corner or whatever.
Totally understand. Totally understand. Look, all I'm saying is, let's just give it its due consideration for the younger students. That is my larger point.
So are you suggesting to make a modification to the policy that specifically states kindergarten students?
Not necessarily specific modification to kindergarten students. I just think this wording is a little bit monolithic.
How would you adjust it then?
Give me some time and I'll rewrite.
Like Rachel said, would you want...
Look, I get it. Give me some time. I understand you live on a cul-de-sac. There's a lot of them. So... I think that, you know, we got 0.5 where, from the state or the feds? Or where do we get the 0.5? Do we We got some guidance on it for existing procedure?
Yes.
Right. All right. So, look, all I'm saying is, do we need to see if there's potential outside of IEP for special consideration based on geography and things like that? And I realize it's being addressed lower in, but maybe we should at least reference within this policy, unless pursuant to other regulations, exceptions are made. That's what I'm saying.
Do we run into a problem where if in kindergarten, the bus goes down, but then they become at Patrick McGarren, let's say, and all of a sudden the bus doesn't come down, and the parents are like, but the bus came down all the other years.
I agree, but, you know, I've got a kid in Spruce Run, a kid in PMG, and my kid in PMG I would trust a little bit more, potentially, kid in RVS.
Of course, that is true, but I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
I get it, yeah.
Saying that it may cause an issue in itself.
My honest opinion is that I think there are cul-de-sacs in this community that we should send our buses down. That's really my larger point. You know, that's kind of my larger point. However, this is a regulation, as the board votes, I accept the opinion of the board, but I've lived here and I've seen it, and I think there are cul-de-sacs, possibly cul-de-sacs shorter than 0.5 miles where I think buses should go. And we've sort of beat the topic to death in the fall, so I don't want to belabor it, but that's kind of my point.
Kevin, sorry.
Related comment, the kids in preschool, they only have transportation if they have a disability.
Well, yeah, Kena pointed out.
And in the past, we transported those kids on a smaller bus, typically door-to-door. But I think more recently, they've been on a full-size bus with kindergartners in first grade. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that would explain a change, you know, from how we used to do it to how we do it today, because they're on that bus. So in that regard, my opinion for preschoolers is that they're too young at the age of 3 to be on the bus with K-1. And I know that's not a universal opinion, it's my opinion based on observation. It's tough for a 3-year-old to go up to the corner to get on the bus with the K-1. And, you know, it's just something to consider when we put out the contracts and build the routes. It's more expensive to do the door-to-door. It's more buses, more drivers. I just think 3 is too young to be on the big bus with the other kids when there's other factors at play.
I think that's right. And we actually did midterm, correct me if I'm wrong, Mrs. Spitzer, but we've actually midterm did accommodate with some smaller buses.
That is correct. Yeah. We actually did add 2 smaller buses due to the length of the routes.
Okay.
But Kevin, you're okay with the cul-de-sac language?
I'm sorry, couldn't
hear you. Are you okay with the cul-de-sac language?
I mean, generally, I'm not a proponent of the buses going down cul-de-sacs because it's not equitable. There's 130 cul-de-sacs. We were going down 10 to 12, and we weren't going down 108 to 110. So that's generally my perspective on that, is it's not equitable to the other 1,100 families who might live on the cul-de-sacs that the buses weren't going down. So that's generally my opinion on that. It's kind of all or nothing, unless it's an extended length. If it's too far, then the buses should go down.
May I comment on that? Because Kevin raises an interesting point. Are there any cul-de-sacs in this district right now on the routing that are longer than 0.5 miles where a bus does not travel? And under this regulation, if adopted, are we now required to send a bus down that cul-de-sac?
Which one, Kevin?
Are there any cul-de-sacs right now along our bus routes that are longer than a half mile on which a bus does not travel, and under this regulation, are we now required to send a bus down that cul-de-sac?
I don't believe so. We've been checking.
Okay.
The mileage.
I think it may, all right. Yeah. Just double checking on that, that's all. Because
half a mile is long.
Why don't you explain that, Heather? There's one cul-de-sac that we have to go down because of safety issues, because of a bridge. It's the only way for us to get those children. So we have to do it. Do you remember the name of the street?
It's Glen Cree.
Okay, and I assume that's a weight limit issue with the bridge?
Yes, in order to turn the bus around to come back to school without going over that bridge, we need to turn around in the cul-de-sac.
Okay.
It's not ideal, but it's the only option.
One final point, and I'll put this out there. In my own sort of, because it's so much fun to read about it, my own night table reading on transportation. One of the things I read was that the turnout, according to some of the DOT stuff that I read, the turnout, the minimum safe circular turnout distance for a bus to execute a turn down a cul-de-sac. And I understand we don't, the safety reg ostensibly does not want buses turning K-turns or J-turns down because they don't want them backing up. But the minimum circular distance is 115 feet, I believe, for a bus to execute a safe turn, according to some of the information that I've read. Have we considered potentially amending our policy if, in fact, something is less than a half a mile? However, the radius of the turnout is greater than 115 feet.
We have, I think to answer that, we have a letter from the state, mm-hmm. which basically tells us that it is the state, there's regulations which support not going down cul-de-sacs. A, because of the limited turnaround space that may make it necessary to back up, that there may be things, vehicles or other objects in there that we may not expect on that particular day, which may cause the bus to have to back up.
Landscaping trucks.
Right, that there's possible damage to private property, and I'm taking this right from the letter, that there's possible damage to private property, cars, mailboxes, and shrubs due to turnaround space. Greater inaccessibility in inclement weather with snow and ice. They also cited that they do not recommend it. Also, entering a main road from a cul-de-sac or dead-end street, because buses are slow-moving vehicles, especially from a dead stop. Exiting either of the above areas into oncoming traffic may create a more hazardous situation than stopping on a main road where the bus is more visible. They continue and say, for these reasons, many districts have policies that do not use cul-de-sacs or dead ends for bus stops unless IEP driven, but in very extreme IEP situations. And then it says, finally, it's the district or Board of Education that's responsible for establishing those policies. But again, the state has told us that it's not safe to do it. And although there isn't a specific law, there's enough statutes that guide us and recommend that we don't do that.
Are we going to put that letter up on the website?
We can do that.
That's a good idea, I think.
Yeah.
I think we've referenced that in the past, too, and we had this discussion.
Right.
Well, yeah, but I don't think the public had access to it. What's the date of that letter and what's the source?
A gentleman by the name of Gregory Ferrer. He's the Senior Pupil Transportation Specialist, Office of Student Transportation, Department of Education in Trenton, October 8th, 2013.
Cool. I think putting it on the website would be valuable.
Yep, we can do that.
But with all of that, what this is a policy, is a recommendation for a course of action. Anyone appealing that with a legitimate reason for an appeal, I think the board would be taking that under consideration, or it's my assumption we'd be taking that under consideration, and an exception could be made for an appropriate circumstance.
You know, I think from my perspective, to establish a policy, and then I can work with the attorneys and with policy and curriculum committee to put together an appeal process, you know, and we can take other things into consideration. But I think we all feel we need to have some sort of standard policy that follows guidelines of what the state recommends to make sure that our students stay safe and we achieve the economies of scale that we're looking for when we bus our students.
I agree.
So are all policies appealable?
I'm sorry?
Are all policies appealable? All policies? I'm just asking. This particular one can be.
Well, I'm suggesting that if someone feels that we would hear them.
Do we entertain appeals for policies? I don't know if it's for the
We have in the past.
We have.
Well, the nature of an IEP oftentimes goes against what a policy is.
Okay. I'm just...
So whenever you have a policy, I'll speak more of the corporate world than here, right, is that policies are meant to be guidelines and standards for operations. That doesn't mean that you don't have exceptions to the policy for legitimate, quote-unquote, business reasons.
Okay.
I would assume that any policy that we have in place, if that were not in the best interest of the particular situation for the community and the individuals involved, the board would consider an exception to the policy. That doesn't mean we would grant it.
The key word is consider.
Correct.
Yeah, and some policies are mandated, and you cannot, they're based on statute law, and you can't, you have no wiggle room at all. Other policies, you might have some.
You know, I don't want to open up a Pandora box here. Okay.
I think it's a good question.
Want to make sure, okay? That's all I'm saying.
I'm very appreciative of the thoughtful work that went into this, mostly for the reason that Dan outlined. It's good to have a policy because then you know the difference between an exception and simply everybody sort of, whatever the whim of the board is that day. So I think your point, Mrs. Green, about maybe drawing up a process mm-hmm. for how exceptions may be considered is excellent.
Mm-hmm. Would that have to be board approved? I mean, would the board vote on that?
We can vote on that, absolutely.
I think that would be appropriate course action for the board to vote on that.
Facilities and finance group and the policy and curriculum group under the guidance of our council. And then the two committees can present it to the board. And then the board can vote on the process that's recommended.
Okay.
I would tell you from facilities too, and you know, Dan and I talked about this last fall. Economies of scale are critical, but not nearly as critical as child safety. Mm-hmm. So I think facilities, I don't want to speak for the entire committee, I think we'd be willing to subordinate economies of scale where appropriate for child safety. So,
on that note, I have one more comment I'd like to make on it. Generally, I'm not a proponent of the buses going down cul-de-sacs. And I do think we should have a distance outline by which we would go down. I'm not sure about the quarter mile. It sounds long.
You mean a half?
Half a mile.
Half. It's a half.
It's 0.5, yeah.
0.5.
Even more so when it applies to especially younger kids, like a kindergarten or half mile. That sounds a little far to me. So I, for one, I'd like to talk more about that length and maybe consider a shorter length than a half mile.
So that was recommended to us, correct? Mm-hmm.
It was recommended to us, and I think the other thing to consider is that we live in a community that has no sidewalks. So the expectation isn't really that the child would be walking to the bus stop, that they would be driven.
It is a change in the philosophy, all right, because most towns do not do cul-de-sacs on a regular basis with, you know, few exceptions. And what the community becomes used to is, I'll tell you on my street, I happen to live on a cul-de-sac, all right, in another community, and it's a relatively long cul-de-sac, and we just always knew. We drove our kids when they were in kindergarten, first grade. We drove our kids to the bus stop, and we waited with them on rainy days, or we walked them down to the bus stop. Bad weather, we pooled cars. We carpooled, and kids jumped in other cars. It was the way we did it because that was the culture and philosophy in the community. We don't have that culture and philosophy right now in Clinton Township, so I think it's going to be a difficult change, and people are going to have to wrap their heads around it a bit and figure out how to do it.
I would disagree somewhat with you, Dr. Clark, in the sense that the majority of our stops are not in cul-de-sacs. I think there's only a small percentage, what we said, 10 maybe, okay, and we have 132 mm-hmm. cul-de-sacs, so... You know, I don't think it's a cultural change, except for perhaps the 10 that this may affect. So, you know, again, if you drive around in the morning, there's cars lined up on the mm-hmm. edge of cul-de-sacs and stuff. So I'm not so sure that it's a major change for us just for the streets.
It's an adjustment.
Just for the streets that are, you know, involved in it. So, any other comments? Okay. Do you want to move here, or we moved already? Can we do a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Ms. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Come back to me, please, Mrs. Spitzer.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
And Mr. Malloy?
No on 32, yes on all.
All yes, motion carries.
Moving on to the report of our communications group, I know there was only 1 week passed from our last meeting, so communications committee has not met. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Very good. We have one coming up, though.
Yes, we do. Thursday, right? Okay. So now we'll move on to old business. This portion of our meeting is for board members to ask questions about old topics on school-related matters only. It's not a time to make personal statements. Rather, it's a time to review topics that have been previously discussed and bring up new topics relative to old topics, relative to business on the board. Anyone have any items they'd like to bring up, old business?
We're discussing the budget we passed last week, the old business week or something.
Old business?
Yeah, I just want to, I think, I want to commend it, actually. It's the second year in a row that we had a 9-0 unanimous vote on the budget, and I think it speaks volumes for how this board has moved forward the past 2 years from the previous culture of the board. I think it's a good thing that 2 years in a row, 9-0 unanimous vote on the budget. I think we're doing the right, we're in the right direction. I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you. Anyone else, old business?
Do we have any news on the demography study?
Did he contact you?
I think he said he was going away, though. Wasn't
Not
he?
Yet.
Hmm? Wasn't he going away?
He's back.
He's back.
I'll send him an email tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Any other old business?
I have one.
Yep.
Last week I attended that school security symposium. I know Mrs. McLaughlin was there also. I don't know if there are other board members there. I just wanted to say I thought it was very well done. Dr. Clark and the PTA put it on. I believe all the school administrators were there. I wouldn't say it was heavily attended, but it was a fair attendance. I know there was a lot of staff there as well, and it was a good presentation. It was somewhat eye-opening, a little disturbing, but I think it was good that we were having a discussion. And I think in the future, the sentiment was it would be good to have more similar discussion. But it was well done. It was, the speaker was Detective Byrd from the County Prosecutor's Office. Seemed to be very expert on the topic, so he's a good resource to us. So I just wanted to compliment Dr. Clark and thank the PTA for sponsoring.
Thank you. I got a lot of comments this week from parents about the program, asking me, you know, they talk to their neighbors, because I asked them to speak to 10 other neighbors and friends about the program, asking if we could schedule something else. Kevin Byrd is definitely interested in scheduling something else. The PTA told me they had around 50 people who attended. So I looked at the auditorium and thought, I thought I sent out a pretty strong request, and the room was, I thought, kind of empty. But they were very excited because they told me that the school security meeting and the meeting we had on Google Docs had the highest attendance of anything that they've ever put on for you know, that type of meeting and presentation. So they were really pleased with it and want me to come up with more ideas. So I'll work on it.
Anything else? Okay, moving on to new business. Is there any new business that members of the board would like to discuss this evening?
I have new business. I just wanted to, on behalf of the Board of Education, thank the teachers and the nurses, because this week, for those of you that don't know, is National Teacher Appreciation Day and National Nurses Day. And I just want to thank them for their service to our community and to the students in our community.
Thank you.
I sent the staff a little note today about how appreciative I am as a superintendent for all the hard work that they do and the extra time and energy. And of course, it's testing week and everybody's a little bit stressed as we begin that process. So it's a hard time, but you know, the PTA has these little treats they give out this week, which are so wonderful.
Any other new business?
Comment on two.
Okay. I'd like to open the floor to our second recognition of the public. This section is for members of the public to express themselves on school matters of community interest. We will follow the same outline for the first public comment section on agenda items only. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 10 minutes.
Regarding the use of the ESC, and it does say for special education, is that actually implying that the ESC will resume the bus rides for special ed?
you have any further questions?
One other.
Okay.
The second question is, well, it's actually not a question, it's just a statement. If there are 10 cul-de-sacs that are no longer going to be serviced in the 2014-15 school year, I would really appreciate it if communications to those families was made in a timely fashion and not left to 5 minutes before the school year starts, as per the last year.
Thank you.
In reference to FF190, currently we contract with ESC for out-of-district students, so we have a cooperative agreement with them. This is not specifically for students to and from school.
Anybody else like to address the board?
In there. I know there is provisions before that about blind turns and such. Does that take precedence over the length of a cul-de-sac, or is it, does that become no cul-de-sacs and all the other preliminary parts not interact with that?
I think all of them are taken into consideration together for that particular street, when we look at that street.
Park testing that was going on. I know there was a letter, I believe, that came out from Dr. Clark about the typing. Was there going to be a curriculum put forwards for next year to get typing in the school systems, or is that something that parents should be looking at to be advancing?
Well, there's a couple of things. We are looking at ways, as you know, out of the mouth of babes. I'm sorry. Oh, I just realized I'm not supposed to be answering questions. I'm sorry. It's automatic. Out of the mouths of babes, the children who took the park field test explained to me that there should be more technology in the earlier grades than they have now. So we are looking at that as a possibility for next year. We're looking at the programming for that. I also made sure that on the parent resource page, if you go to our website, look for the parent resource page. There are actually typing programs there that you can access that your kids can do during the summer for fun. For rainy days, for all kinds of times when you you might go on vacation on a rainy day and have a laptop that you can put them on, and they can do those things for extra added work for them. So we're looking at a number of different things in our technology program to support this park testing. Some of it we have in place, and some of it we may have to do some new designs for that.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to address the board? Okay.
Before we move on, could we go back to new business?
Sure.
Am I allowed? I wanted to compliment Tim Jobb.
Yep. You can't.
Can't do that in new business?
Now, see, you're
well, where can you do
trouble.
It?
Okay.
Can't say the name.
Would you like to explain why?
No, where can you do it is the question.
She cannot do it in public session without Mr. Jaw being right.
Right, you can't.
Oh,
you can't
all right,
talk.
Sorry. Okay.
See, when I did it, I was doing it generally. You have to be general.
Okay.
So let's rice him for the meeting on the 19th.
Okay, we'll rice him.
Okay, sure.
Personal compliment.
No, it's really okay.
But okay.
I'm good. Didn't know that was
going to go. Tim, I think you're a nice guy.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, the board will now move into executive session. Mrs. Spitzer, would you please read the statement for executive session?
Nice.
whereas while the Senator Byron M. Baer Open Public Meeting Act, NJSA 10:4-6, requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10:4-12b sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session, i.e. without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10:4-12b to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during the executive session. Whereas any matter involving the employment, appointment, termination of employment, terms and conditions of employment, evaluation of the performance, promotion, or disciplining any specific prospective public officer or employee or current public officer or employee employed or appointed by the public body, unless all individual employees or appointees whose rights could be adversely affected request in writing that such matter or matters be discussed at a public meeting, subject to the balancing of the public's interest and the employee's privacy rights under South Jersey Publishing Company versus New Jersey Expressway Authority 124 NJ 478, the employees and nature of the discussion described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality or non-affiliated staff contracts, and whereas any collective bargaining agreement or the terms and conditions of which are proposed for inclusion in any collective bargaining agreement, including the negotiation of terms and conditions with employees or representative of employees of the public body. The collective bargaining contract discussed is between the Clinton Township Board of Education and the Clinton Township Education Association and the Clinton Township Board of Education and the Clinton Township Administrators Association. And whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 60 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for only the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reasons for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Thank you, Mrs. Spitzer. I'm looking for a motion to go into executive session, please.
So moved.
Kevin?
Second.
Second. Dan? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Executive session?